So we are in the 11th chapter, the cosmic form, the Virat Roop, where at Arjuna's request, the Lord shows him the cosmic divine form, where Arjuna sees the entire universe in the Lord. All hands are His, all heads are His, thousands of hands, thousands of eyes, thousands of heads, past, present and future, even all the different worlds and the stars and the sun and the moon, the heaven, the hell, all of them he sees. And as we said, initially he is wonderstruck, and then he has fear because this immense form, and we'll read about that today also, how he feels that his intellect is not able to handle this vastness. Because he thought of Arjuna, of Krishna as his friend and his charioteer, and now he's now seeing him as the Lord of the universe, and the whole universe is in him. And then he has this attitude of adoration, of devotion, of surrender, where he bows down to the Lord and asks for forgiveness. Last week we had studied where he said in the verse 40, 41 and 42, he said that I bow down to you 1,000 times, and I was such a fool. I just thought of you as my friend, and I put my arms around your shoulder and used to walk, and we used to wrestle in the bed and play games, and sometimes I called you names, called you fool, insulted you, and you know, and all that. And how could I have even imagined that the Lord of the whole universe, who the whole sustains the entire universe, and I use such language for him, and I thought he was my friend, and you know, as a friend I did it, but I want your forgiveness, O Lord, because I didn't realize whom I was dealing with. It's like Swamiji in his commentary also says that there is some very big official, like you're sitting in the plane next to this person and you don't know who he is, and you're going to get a contract from his department, and you start criticizing, you know, these people in this department, they are so lazy, and then suddenly after the end of the plane trip, you ask him, who are you? And he says, I am the head of that department. Then suddenly you feel bad that, you know, I shouldn't have said all those things, you know. So similarly, he says, I did not realize who you were. And so because of that, I ask for your forgiveness. And he then continues in the verse number 43. And here we see not only the humility of Arjuna, but also his love for the Lord and his recognition. It's like his transformation is complete. Initially, he was a skeptic, you know. I don't think this knowledge is going to help me that much. You know, this problem of this war and all that. But then slowly with this, and that's what happens to all of us. You know, we get into this Gita thinking, theek hai, you know, it's okay, it's something to pass the time, or maybe for whatever reason, or I'm having a problem, or for whatever reason we come to this knowledge. But the more you get deeper into it, it's like you're getting sucked into this. And then you realize how beautiful it is and how beneficial it is and how it changes your life. I feel that we were going in this one direction, and then suddenly the guru came and just twisted our head and pointed us in the right direction. We were all running out into the world of objects, emotions, thoughts, wanting, acquiring, possessing, thinking this is the only thing that is important. But suddenly the guru comes and turns your attention inward. That there is a different world that you really need to pursue. So that is the glory of this knowledge. And the same thing Arjuna is going through. It is like he's just awestruck, he's wonderstruck. And the more you put yourself in Arjuna's shoes, you realize how beautiful this chapter is and what he's visualizing and what he's seeing. So we'll go to verse number 43. Pitasi lokasya characharasya tvamasya pujyascha gurur gariyan Natvat samostyabhyadika kutonyaha. Tvat samostyabhyadika kutonyaha. Lokatrayepya pratima prabhava. This chapter is very, very hard to chant. It's full of all these tongue twisters, and it's the poetry is very beautiful, and the symbolism and the way Vyas has created this drama, it's very beautiful, but it's a very difficult chapter to chant. Like the Gita chanting kids, I'm sure they will tell you that the 11th chapter was one of the hardest. So he says, Pita, see, you are the Lord, you are the Father. Father of what? Lok Asya. Asya means this loka, this world. And who? What does the world consist of? Chara and achara. Chara means those who eat. Achara means those who do not eat. Chara means those who move. Achara means those who do not move. So chara, achara means the living and the non-living, the ones that move and the ones that do not move. So chara and achara, so the living and the non-living, you are the Lord, the Father of everything, not only the plants, animals, birds, but even the rocks and the minerals and the mountains and oceans, everything has been created by you. You are the Father. Then you are Asya of this world. You are what? Pujya. You are the most worshipful. Pujya means you are the worshipful. And Gurur Gariyan. And you are the greatest guru. Gariyan means the heaviest. So here it means the greatest guru. You are the guru of all gurus. Then he says, Na Twat Sama. Like you, Asta Abhyadikah Kutonya. There is no one. Sama means no one like you. Asta. There is no one asti. Sama like you. Adhika kuto anyaha. How can anybody be greater than you? O Lord, there is no one equal to you in this whole universe. Forget about anybody being greater to you. Lokatraya api apratima prabhava. Lokatraya, of these three worlds. What are the three worlds? The heavens, all the seven heavens that we have, where all the different heavens, where Brahma Lok and Shiva Lok and Vishnu Lok and Vaikuntha and all those, the worlds of angels and, you know, gods and the demigods. And then the earth, which is the eighth. And then there are six below us, where all the hells, where all the demons live and the ghosts and goblins and, you know, where all the lower. So the heavens and the hells are the, so the seven heavens are one world, the earth is one, and then the hell. So that's why they say there are three worlds. Loka Traya Api Apratima Prabhava. You are of incomparable power, incomparable prowess. There is no one equal to you. Now, with that we all know, you know, we say that God is the Father of the universe or the Mother, you know, that's why even in the 9th chapter he says, Pitaha Masya Jagataha Mata Dhata Pitamaha. I am the Father, I am the Mother, I am the Grandfather. That means the Lord was there before the universe came. So obviously the Father is there before the child. So here also the Lord was there first, and then the earth is are his, all of us are his children. And he says, of all these, the living and the non-living, and when he talks about loka, when we talk about world, we think of loka as only this world of objects that I can see, the plants, the animals, the people, the chairs, the table. But there is also a world of objects. There is a world of emotions. All my joys and sorrows, and not only my joys and sorrows, but the joys and sorrows of all the beings in the universe, the animals and the plants. And then there is a world of ideas, the Einsteinian ideas of space and time and science. And so all of these worlds, whether it's my world of objects, the world of emotions, or the world of thoughts and concepts, that counts as the loka, as the entire universe. And you are the Lord, which means that the consciousness alone is the Lord of this whole world. And in me also, this consciousness was not there. I may have this body, I may have the mind, I may have the intellect, but I'll not be able to function. I won't be able to see, hear, think, feel, and I'll have to be taken to the nearest crematorium. So it is the consciousness that is the Lord, that is within us and without, as the consciousness, as the Lord of the entire universe. So because everything would runs because of his presence. If the Lord was not there, nothing would function. The plants wouldn't grow. The animals wouldn't be able to move. Even the, you know, whatever inventions, discoveries, whatever we have done in the past is all because of the Lord's grace. And also the other aspect of that is, which we have talked about before, is that when everything is, when there is one Father and everybody is that creation, then everybody is my brother and sister. You know, all beings, even the plants or the animals or the birds or the fish, I should have equal love for all. And that's why he says, Tvam Asya, and you are the worshipful one. So we had talked about last week also, how do you worship the Lord? By service. By serving them all as my brothers and sisters. Of course, the highest truth of Vedanta is that there is only one consciousness from which this universe emerged. And so everything is one, and I am equal, I am one with all. So everything is me. That is the highest understanding. But we can start with the understanding that I love everybody as my brothers and sisters, and I cherish all the plants and the birds and the animals. I love them all. And then slowly, slowly, then you can reach the level of the rishis where you say, I am that consciousness and everything is me, which is a little difficult, more difficult concept. But through meditation and through the grace of the Guru and the Lord, we can come to that understanding. And so I have to serve, I have to help. This reminds me of a little story. This man says, you know, when I get sick, I go to the doctors, I go to the best doctors, and I pay whatever they charge. Because, you know, I have to serve. After all, doctors need to live. So I pay them whatever they ask. Okay, and then, you know, they send me to the lab and I get all the lab tests done, whatever they need. After all, the labs have to live too. So I have to take care of the labs, I have to take care of the doctors. Then he sends me to the specialist, I go see the specialist, I pay whatever. After all, specialists have to live too. Then they send me for x-rays. I go get the x-rays done. Why? Because the radiologists and x-ray people have to live too. Then they send me to the pharmacist. So I go buy the medicines. After all, pharmacists and the pharmacies also have to survive. It is my duty to serve all of them. So they have to live too. So doctors have to live, and the labs have to live, and the x-ray and the pharmacist, they all have to live. So I go and get everything. And then I get the medicine, and then I go home and throw it in the trash because I have to live too. I'm sure the doctors here are not very happy. Just a joke. But the point is that service is that you see everything as the Lord's expression. So that's why he says you are the Lord of the universe, of all, and you are the worshipful one. Worship, again, as I mentioned, is not only throwing flowers or lighting a candle, but seeing the Lord in awe. And then he says, Guru Gariyan, you are the greatest guru. And that is true. Even in the Dakshinamurti Stotram, where the student approaches Lord Shiva himself and he asks for the knowledge. And the teacher, the Lord Shiva, teaches him in silence. He just, you know, makes this mudra, and in that silence, the student understands what is the highest truth. And that's why the Dakshinamurti Stotram, only though it's 10 verses, has very beautifully expressed the highest truth and also what is the world and what is creation. I praise that book many times because really it's only $2.50. Go to the library and buy it. It will take you a few hours to read. There is no better use of your time or money to read that text. It's a beautiful text. And there he says that, O Lord, you are my teacher. He says, Ishvaro Guru Atmeti Murti Bheda Vibhagine Vyoma Vapt Vyapta Dehaya Dakshinamurtaye Namaha. Oh, I prostrate to the Lord Dakshinamurti, who is my teacher. And what did he teach me? Of course, he taught me the scriptures and all. But the highest knowledge that the teacher can give you is Ishvara, Guru, and Atma. So the Lord, the Guru, and I, Eti Murti Bheda Vibhagine. Ultimately, we are all one. You start with the understanding that, oh, my Guru, I prostrate to you because I learn from you. Oh, Lord, I prostrate to you because you are the creator of the universe. And as long as you have this body identification, you have to do that. You cannot start walking around and saying, I am that consciousness, I am Brahman, I am God, and you know, not, that's not the idea. At the body level, we have to be a servant of the Lord. You have to prostrate to the Lord. You have to prostrate to your teacher who taught you. But at the level of the consciousness, that consciousness is all one. And sometimes people misunderstand that and start, some people become very arrogant or some people get very confused that how can you say the Lord of the universe and the Guru and I are one? At the body level or at the mind level, we are separate. I am separate from my teacher. I am separate from the Lord. But at the level of the consciousness, there is only one consciousness. So when you wake up to that consciousness, then you have that experience. At the present moment, I have to serve the world and I have to serve the Lord. And in my opinion, spiritual knowledge is impossible without having a guru. If you think that you can just pick up a book and read and realize the truth, it will never happen. No matter, you may spend years, you may spend 10 lifetimes, you may read all the books. It's very, very important to have a guru for every spiritual aspirant. And people say, where am I going to find a guru? You know, gurus are so hard to find. They are not. All you have to have is a strong desire. If you have a desire, a guru appears. You know, when we go out to play golf, you cannot say, I'm going to read all the golf books and learn how to play golf. When you start hitting the ball, I mean, your ball will go here, there, everywhere. You'll hit your own foot instead of hitting the ball. But you need a golf pro, a guru who will come and teach you, okay, hit the ball like this. That is how your body should be. That is how your shoulder should be. Your head position. And I mean, when we go to college, you know, to learn science or chemistry or mathematics, we don't tell our children, you can stay home and study math. You know, you don't need to. No, we send them to school. We send them to college. Those are the gurus. So the spiritual science is a lot more subtle, is a lot more difficult to learn than physics or chemistry or mathematics or golf or driving. Even to learn driving, we have a guru. To learn cooking, you know, the ladies know that their mother or somebody taught them. So the worldly knowledge, we need a teacher, but for the spiritual knowledge, you must have a teacher. It's very important to sit down and search in your heart and find a guru. And we have so many, you know, wonderful teachers who come here, so many acharyas. So develop a relationship with them. Don't just come and say, okay, I listen to the lecture and I go. But spend time with them. Maybe, you know, you can offer them food, you know, which is one way of spending time. Maybe ask for an appointment and sit down and meet with them. Or they would love to do that. Or just say, okay, I want to go for a walk and take Swamiji for a walk. I do that. You know, we go to that park, River Park. And for half an hour, 1 hour, whether you ask him questions or not, just being in their presence. Pankaj takes every opportunity to drive them, and that's a wonderful thing. You know, pick them up from Los Angeles and bring them, or from San Jose. And once you develop a relationship, then you can, so even if they come here twice or three times a year, but you can read their books, you can listen to their talks on the internet, you can buy CDs, you can buy tapes. And once you have a relationship with the guru, then you can pick up the phone and call and say, I have this question, I have this doubt. So people don't understand that. You know, they think, you know, these gurus have just started this tradition just so people come and touch their feet and, you know, offer them food. That's not it, because they also learn from their teachers. And without a guru, absolutely not. Nobody can progress spiritually. I wanted to emphasize that, because for me personally, you know, I really, whatever little I know, it is because of my contact with Swami Chinmayananda and Swami Tejomayananda ji and Ishwarananda ji and all the Prabhuji and all these other acharyas who came. So spend time with them and find a guru and get close to him or her. You know, it can be a female, it doesn't have to be a male. But without a guru, you know, even the Tulsi, who was that who said that? Kabir Das Ji says, he says, Guru Govind khade, aako lage paaye, balihar guru ki jo Govind diyo bataye. He said, my guru and the Lord are both standing in front of me. They both have appeared. Whose feet am I going to touch first? The God's feet or the Guru's? He says, I have to touch Guru's feet, but because without Guru, I won't know who the Lord is. To recognize the Lord, I need the Guru. If I didn't have a Guru, I wouldn't know who the Lord is. So his idea being that the Guru is the one that gives me this knowledge. And that's why having an attitude of love and reverence and respect for the spiritual teachers is very, very important. And take advantage. We have so many teachers and learn from them. And that is my little message from this. So he says, O Lord, you are Guru Gariyan. You are the highest Guru because all Gurus learn from you. Even Jesus or Buddha or Swami Chinmayananda or Shankaracharya or Guru Nanak or whatever all the saints and sages and prophets who appeared on this earth. They were all created by you. All the Vedas and the Bible and the Quran and the Bhagavad Gita and the Guru Granth Sahib, they're all your creation. You say, oh, you know what, man wrote them. What do you mean God created? But the scriptures, especially the Vedas, they are called Shruti. The Vedas, the original four Vedas are called Shruti. Why are they called Shruti? Because Shruti means heard. So these Vedas were not composed by a human. What they did was these rishis went into deep meditation, and in their meditation they were in touch with the cosmos, with the higher worlds. And in their meditation they heard these mantras of these Vedas, and they had tremendous intellect that they remembered them. See, you and I, if we hear something, we need to hear it 10 times before we remember. But they had to just hear it once, and they memorized all of those thousands of verses. And then these verses were passed on by them to their students, and the students also heard and they memorized. You know, those days they didn't have paper, pen, book or anything. And so they just had to hear from the teacher and they memorized. They said, okay, all the mantras. So all these thousands of Vedic mantras were passed on from student to teacher to student to teacher on, all with Lord as being the original teacher because it was heard by the rishis. And then later on, of course, Ved Vyasji, we know he came and he organized these Vedas because he realized that people are not going to have time to sit and memorize, you know, because the way in the olden days, people could memorize just thousands of verses. For us, you ask somebody to memorize even three verses of the Bhagavad Gita, he'll say, it's too hard. Give me one verse or give me one word or one line. You know, our students in Gita chanting, they memorize the whole chapters and they do a very good job. You should sometime hear them. But it's hard work. But still, you know, the memorization is a very beautiful way to get this knowledge. So Ved Vyasji realized that it's going to be difficult for people to memorize all these thousands of verses. So then he actually wrote them down and organized them. So that's why these verses are called Shruti. And then the subsequent books like the Bhagavad Gita or the Ramayana or the Mahabharata, they were written by man. So they are not called Shruti, they are called Smriti. Smriti means remembered. So, having heard this knowledge from the teacher, they remembered it and then composed. So, that's why the Bhagavad Gita is not called Shruti. It is called Smriti because it was written by Ved Vyasji. So, he says, you are the highest Guru. Na tvat sama asto abhi adhika kutan kuto anyah. How can there be anybody higher than you? There is no one even equal to you. And that we all admit, you know, the Lord of the universe. He says, oh Lord, you are the most powerful. You are all knowing. You are all omniscient, omnipotent, you know, omnipresent. You are everywhere. But why, how do we say that he is higher? It's like, you know, I have a dream. And in the dream, say I go to my friend's house. And there I meet my friend and then I ask him for some money that I had lent him. And the friend says, no, I'm not going to give it. Get out of here. And so I'm walking home, and I'm very depressed. And on the home, way home, I see the cars, and I see the people. And I'm sad because I, you know, lost my money and all that. So in my dream, I created myself. And then I created my friend, and then I created his house, and then I created the cars and the road and the people and the traffic light. Now, I was walking, but is anything in the dream equal to me? No, they are all my creation, right? In my mind, I created this world. Now, that friend that was created in my dream, yes, the real friend is different. Okay, he is equal to me. But in the dream, I created this whole world. Nothing in that world is equal to me, right? I am the creator of this dream world, which I created for maybe a few minutes, 2 minutes or 5 minutes. And in that dream, I went through the various experiences. So nothing in the dream world is equal to me, the waker. Because I am the waker and I created this dream world. And when I am the creator, they are all my creation. They are not equal to me. Forget about being greater than me. You cannot say that that car in the dream was greater to me or that money in the dream. You know, in the dream, the money had a lot of value. But when I wake up, I say, the friend doesn't even owe me any money. So the money is I cannot bring back. The money has no value in the waking world. Or if I am in the dream and I win the lottery and I win, $10 million and I'm very happy. Oh, I won $10 million because I had read about this guy in Arizona who won, you know, the power lottery. So in the dream, I won $10 million. But when I wake up, can I bring those $10 million into the waking world and say, I'm going to use it? No. So anything that I create in my dream cannot be real, cannot be equal to me. So similarly, the Lord of the universe has created this dream world, which is in the mind of the Lord, just as the dream was in my mind. So the Lord in his mind has created this dream world, which you and I are living in. And we think this is real, and this is the best, and this is the only world, and this is the only place. But the wise people tell us, the saints and the scholars tell us that there is a higher world, and that is the world of consciousness, the world of the Lord, where none of these experiences can be transported, cannot be, just as from the dream, I cannot bring my $10 million into this waking world. So if I have $10 million in this world, I cannot take it. Once I die or once I go there, I cannot take even a penny. I might have a best house, I may have the best car, I may have nothing I can transport. Only thing you can take are your karmas, your actions, and the result of that. So that's why they say that in that world, none of this world is valid. None of this is real. At this moment, the world looks very real, but it has a temporary existence. The permanent is the Lord of the universe, the consciousness. And that is the only thing which is real, which is permanent, which is everlasting, which will never change. This world that we are living in is ever changing. It is temporary. It is nashwan. It is destructible. It is full of joys and sorrows, full of problems and all. So when you wake up to that higher reality, and that's what they say in your meditation and in your understanding, you wake up to that higher world. And then you realize that this world is not that important. You know, you and I get so caught up in our little petty problems and small little. And then when you see that vastness, oh my God, how vast. Just as in the dream, I was so upset that my friend didn't give me money. But when I woke up, I said, I was unnecessarily perplexed about it. There is no world. There is no money. There was no friend. So similarly, when you wake up to that Lord, the consciousness, then this world does not have as much importance. Does not mean a saint does not see the world. He sees the world as you and I do. But you and I see the world with a limited vision. He sees the world with a higher vision, with a larger vision. So spiritual growth is not that suddenly you get a halo on your head or something, you know, or you can walk on water. It is just a change of vision, where you see the world as the oneness, you see the Lord, and that is all the spirituality is. So he says, O Lord, you are that oneness, and I have seen it. And Arjuna was so fortunate. Even though he was not a Mahatma, not a great Rishi, he had not done much meditation, he hadn't even studied the scriptures. But just out of his love for the Lord, he asked, and the Lord out of love showed him. So he says, it is your grace that I have seen this. And in these three worlds, apratima prabhava, there is nobody equal to you, nobody comparable to you. And that is the beauty of this chapter and the beauty of this form, that it gives us a little vision of what that infinite reality is. As close as can be put in words has been put in this chapter. It's very nice. They're all expressions of Brahman. They're all descriptions. Synonym for, you can call it reality, you can call it the truth. By truth, he means that this whole world is untrue, is unreal. There is one truth, one reality, one consciousness, and everything is just a dream. Just as there is a movie screen, you know, the movie screen is permanent. On that screen, there is all different movies playing on it. So the truth is the screen, the movies that are running have no reality. It is just somebody shot it somewhere and put the films together and just ran it. And somebody's dream world, he created a world where he had all these hero and heroine and villain. Now, in that movie, there may be blood, you know, people getting killed. But the movie screen does not get red. The movie screen remains white. There may be fire burning, fire in the whole movie, but the screen remains white. It does not even get even a tinge of that blackness. There may be water like floods, but the screen remains dry. There may be war and, you know, love and sorrow. The screen is unaffected, but the screen is necessary for the movie to play. If the screen was not there, the movie would not have a place to play. So Brahman is that consciousness which supports this whole universe. Itself is unaffected. And the Brahman is necessary. There has to be a substratum or a support for this world. So that is what we say, that the consciousness is the substratum, is the support. So in your prayers or in your meditation, you shift your attention from the world and shift it to the substratum, the consciousness, the sakshi, the witness, in whose presence this whole world is happening. And that's what. So that is the essence of spirituality. So he is the reality, he is the truth, he is Brahman, he is the consciousness, he is existence. Some places they call him Sat. So these are all different, because the Brahman cannot be defined, but through all these terms, you get little descriptions of that.